So tonight we're reading The Housewife Who Drank at Home. We're on page 295 in the fourth edition. And we don't know the name of this author, and we don't know the city she is from. But we are able to glean quite a bit, I think, out of this that makes it a very interesting story. And also, my goal in going through these stories is to come up with some little facts or nuances that can be used as a way of pushing a person into reading that story, encouraging a person to read that story, because there potentially would be some identification, more than just an arbitrary story. Let's get into this, and I'll point out a couple of things that that jumped off the page at me. We're on story three, part two, page 295, The Housewife Who Drank at Home. She hid her bottles in clothes hampers and dresser drawers. In AA, she discovered she had lost nothing and had found everything. And what we see already there is the criteria of being in part two is they stopped in time. In other words, a higher bottom than we saw with potentially in the Pioneers or some of our earlier members. So what we do know about this is that it was written for the second edition, so probably put together in the early 50s. What was striking to me is how similar it was to last week's story, Fear of Fear, and we'll see some of those parallels immediately. A couple of things that to note. She's obviously a homemaker. She started drinking when she was married. She only drank at home. And the reason she claims to have started drinking was to deal with stress and anxiety, and almost drank medicinally. And in fact, she makes a statement in here where she wouldn't even have categorized it as drinking, at least initially. Her drink of choice initially was wine exclusively, until she had a little 3-week window due to her son, which we'll come to, where the son was prescribed brandy. And of course, the ailment, the coughing ailment of the son, she probably potentially thought she was going to get, and moved over to brandy. And that really put her into a spiral. She ended up drinking beer, and she never liked beer. So sort of shows the progression all the way down to the alcohol you don't even enjoy, don't even like, or think you don't like. You're in the need category at that point. All right, let's get going. My story happens to be a particular kind of woman's story, the story of a woman who drinks at home. I had to be at home. I had two babies. When alcohol took me over, my bar was my kitchen, my living room, my bedroom, the back bathroom, and the two laundry hampers. At one time, the admission that I was and am an alcoholic meant shame, defeat, and failure to me. But in the light of the new understanding that I have found in AA, I have been able to interpret that defeat and that failure and that shame as seeds of victory. Because it was only through feeling defeat and feeling failure, the inability to cope with my life and with alcohol, that I was able to surrender and accept the fact that I had this disease and that I had to learn to live again without alcohol. So what I thought was significant in this paragraph is I really think it's an example of her taking steps 1, 2, and 3 of when she comes into AA, this is the example of her jumping off place, i.e. she says, because it was only through my feeling defeat, powerlessness, and feeling failure, powerlessness, and the inability to cope with my life, unmanageability, while drinking, it says, and with alcohol, while drinking, I could not cope with life. I could not manage my life. So I think that was step one. And then she you know, it's not so fleshed out at this point. I have the advantage in that I've read ahead, and she'll talk about the surrender a little bit more. But then she says that I was able to surrender steps 2 and 3. And accept the fact that I had this disease and had to learn how to live again without alcohol. Well, the thing that made me stop in my tracks was she used the word disease. And actually, I misspoke last week, and I want to correct that right now, just real quick. In my head, I had it as the AMA had designated alcoholism a disease in 54, and that the prior author, Seal M, knew that when she was writing, and it had a very, the writing seemed to me to be based on some of that new understanding. The 12 and 12 was out and had a little bit of a different vibe for me, but it's wrong. The AMA categorized alcoholism in 56. And in some cases, you see it as they designated it as an illness. And I really think at that time they were using the word interchangeably. But the fact of the matter is that that the AMA had not had that designation when this was written. It was probably written in 53, 54, and the second edition is published in 55. So impossible. But what it did lead me to is like, okay, so what's the deal with that? And I just see popular verbiage at this time, early 50s, disease was being used all over the place, even by doctors. And particularly if they had something to sell. There was even, I even found an article, a advertisement, I should say, from 1908. And I even saw something 1897. And so disease was not an uncommon word usage at this time. In fact, it was probably coming to its peak, you know, with the AMA then going in 56. So where did she actually get that from? Well, it made me think about it. And I did a word search on the big book. And we know in the first 164, it only appears one time, and it appears as spiritual disease. It's not actually talking about alcoholism per se. All forms of spiritual disease is the paraphrase. But it was in the 12 and 12. It's in tradition 5, page 150. So the traditions were ratified in 1950. So let's make the assumption that, you know, she's a good AA member in the early 50s with a few years under her belt when she writes this thing. She would have been familiar with the use of the word disease via tradition 5 internally, literature wise. So I wanted to correct my misspeak last week, and B, just to see where potentially she got the use of that word. So let's keep going. I was never a very heavy social drinker, but during a period of particular stress and strain, about 13 years ago, I resorted to using alcohol in my home alone as a means of temporary release of getting a little extra sleep. I had problems. We all had them. And I thought a little brandy or a little wine now and then could certainly hurt no one. I don't believe when I started that I even had in mind the thought that I was drinking. I had to sleep. I had to clear my mind and free it from worry. And I had to relax. But from one or two drinks of an afternoon or evening, my intake mounted, and mounted fast. It wasn't long before I was drinking all day. I had to have that wine. The only incentive that I had toward the end for getting dressed in the morning was to get out and get supplies to help me get my day started. But the only thing that got started was my drinking. I should have realized that alcohol was getting a hold of me when I started to become secretive in my drinking. I began to have to have supplies on hand for people who might come in. And of course, a half-empty bottle wasn't worth keeping. So I finished it up and naturally had to get more in right away for the people who might come in unexpectedly. But I was always the unexpected person who had to finish the bottle. I couldn't go to one wine store and look the man honestly in the face and buy a bottle, as I used to do when I had parties and entertained and did normal drinking. I had to give him a story and ask him the same question over and over again. Well, now, how many will that bottle serve? I wanted him to be sure that I wasn't the one who was going to drink the whole bottle. So what can we extrapolate from that paragraph? Well, unlike last week, Fear of Fear, where the author started her drinking during Prohibition, and where we came with that from was her use of the term corn liquor, homemade, this woman is going to a wine store. So I would suggest that she started her drinking sometime after 1933, sometime after Prohibition. That's what I got there. I had to hide, as a great many people in AA have had to do. I did my hiding in the hampers and in my dresser drawers. When we begin to do things like that with alcohol, something's gone wrong. I needed it, and I knew I was drinking too much, but I wasn't conscious of the fact that I should stop. I kept on. Insidiousness. My home at that time was a place to mill around in. I wandered from room to room, thinking, drinking, drinking, thinking, and the mops would come out, and the vacuum would come out, everything would come out, but nothing would get done. Toward 5 o'clock, helter-skelter, I'd get everything put away and try to get supper on the table, and after supper, I'd finish the job up and knock myself out. I never knew which came first, the thinking or the drinking. If I could only stop thinking, I wouldn't drink. If I could only stop drinking, maybe I wouldn't think. But they were all mixed up together, and I was all mixed up inside. And yet, I had to have that drink. You know the deteriorating effects, the disintegrating effects of chronic wine drinking. I cared nothing about my personal appearance. I didn't care what I looked like. I didn't care what I did. To me, taking a bath was just being in a place with a bottle where I could drink in privacy. I had to have it with me at night in case I woke up and needed that drink. How I ran my home, I don't know. I went on, realizing what I was becoming, hating myself for it, bitter, blaming life, blaming everything but the fact that I should turn about and do something about my drinking. Finally, I didn't care. I was beyond caring. I just wanted to live to a certain age, carry through with what I felt was my job with the children, and after that, no matter. Half a mother was better than no mother at all. I needed that alcohol. I couldn't live without it. I couldn't do anything without it. But there came a point when I could no longer live with it. And that came after a 3 weeks illness of my son. The doctor prescribed a teaspoon of brandy for the boy to help him through the night when he coughed. Well, of course, that was all I needed to switch from wine to brandy for 3 weeks. I knew nothing about alcoholism or the DTs, but when I woke up on that last morning of my son's illness, I taped the keyhole on my door because everyone was out there. I paced back and forth in the apartment with the cold sweats. I screamed on the telephone for my mother to get up there. Something was going to happen. I didn't know what, but if she didn't get there quick, I'd split wide open. I called my husband up and told him to come home. After that, I sat for a week, a body in a chair, a mind off in space. I thought the two would never get together. I knew that alcohol and I had to part. I couldn't live with it anymore. And yet, how was I going to live without it? I didn't know. I was bitter, living in hate. The very person who stood with me through it all and has been my greatest help was the person that I had turned against, my husband. I also turned against my family, my mother. The people who would have come to help me were just the people I would have nothing to do with. And so I guess the thing there that sort of caught my attention was Although she probably did it medicated wise, note that she did not go to a hospital. So what I read into that was that she detoxed at home. She has a relationship with a primary care physician that we'll see a little bit later on. So she that sitting in the chair, a body sat for a week, a body in a chair and a mind off in space. I'm guessing that she did that at home under the doctor's care medically. But I thought the point there is not going to a detox, not going to one of these facilities, because they really they were not, you know, as prevalent as we're seeing them now. Okay. Nevertheless, I began to try to live without alcohol, but I only succeeded in fighting it. And believe me, an alcoholic cannot fight alcohol. I said to my husband, I'm going to try to get interested in something outside, get myself out of this rut I'm in. I thought I was going out of my mind. If I didn't have a drink, I had to do something. I became one of the most active women in the community. What with PTA, other community organizations and drives, I'd go into an organization and it wasn't long before I was on the committee. And then I was chairman of the committee. And if I was in a group, I'd soon be treasurer or secretary of that group. But I wasn't happy. I became a Jekyll and Hyde person. As long as I worked, as long as I got out, I didn't drink. But I had to get back to that first drink somehow. And when I took that first drink, I was off on the usual merry-go-round. And it was my home that suffered. I figured I'd be all right if I could find something I'd like to do. So when the children were in school from 9 to 3, I started up a nice little business and was fairly successful in it, but not happy, because I found that everything I turned to became a substitute for drink. And when all of life is a substitute for drink, there's no happiness, no peace. I still had to drink. I still needed that drink. Mere cessation from drinking is not enough for an alcoholic. While the need for that drink goes on, I switched to beer. I had always hated beer, but now I grew to love it. So that wasn't my answer either. Another little color commentary there is she actually started to drink warm beer. And how do we know that? I actually read this story as it was published in the second edition. My current sponsor has a second edition, and she references warm beer in that version. They must have tweaked it a dot at some point. I went to my doctor again. He knew what I was doing, how I was trying. I said, I can't find my middle road in life. I can't find it. It's either all work or I drink. He said, why don't you try Alcoholics Anonymous? I was willing to try anything. Gift of desperation. She's hopeless here. I was licked. For the second time, I was licked. The first time was when I knew I couldn't live with alcohol. But this second time, I found I couldn't live normally without it. And I was licked worse than ever. The fellowship I found in AA enabled me to face my problem honestly and squarely. I couldn't do it among my relatives. I couldn't do it among my friends. No one likes to admit they're a drunk, that they can't control this thing. But when we come into AA, we can face our problem honestly and openly. I went to closed meetings and open meetings, and I took everything that AA had to give me. Easy does it. First things first, one day at a time. It was at that point that I reached surrender. I heard one very ill woman say that she didn't believe in the surrender part of the AA program. My heavens, surrender to me has meant the ability to run my home, to face my responsibilities as they should be faced, to take life as it comes to me day by day and work out my problems. That's what surrender has meant to me. I surrendered once to the bottle, and I couldn't do these things. Since I gave my will over to AA, whatever AA has wanted me, I've tried to do to the best of my ability. When I'm asked to go out on a call, I go. I'm not going. AA is leading me there. AA gives us alcoholics direction into a way of life without the need for alcohol. That life for me is lived one day at a time, letting the problems of the future rest with the future. When the time comes to solve them, God will give me strength for that day. I had been brought up to believe in God, but I know that until I found this AA program, I had never found or known faith in the reality of God, the reality of his power that is now with me in everything I do. And I think that was a great example of her switching from the surrender to AA and then seeing how it morphs over time into the understanding that it's surrender, that she's accepting it as a surrender to a spiritual knowing. She's using that word there. Belief is different than knowing. Belief is different than dependence. Faith is different than trust. It's action. She's saying that the third step is traveling with her. And I believe that is the example of her spiritual awakening, spiritual experience. And with that, I'm going to stop. But maybe I just want to say one more thing. I just want a little more clarification on, you know, the fact that she detoxed at home. Again, we don't know where this is. I was talking to somebody that's on the call right now. Knickerbocker Hospital in New York was one of the first, if not the first hospital that had like an alcoholic ward where people would be brought in specifically for alcoholism. And that was in 1946. So although we see with, you know, Towns Hospital in New York, and we see, you know, these private, you know, sort of upmarket detox gigs, and we see in Akron with Dr. Bob, the rest of the country, I think, took a little bit longer to get on board with that stuff. So it wouldn't surprise me if this is a, you know, maybe a more less popular place to live, that there really wouldn't be that many places to choose from. So I'm going to end with that. Thank you so much.